actually a little past 6:30. Sorry for the delay. If you could please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we'll call the meeting to order. Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genrick.
Here.
Trustee Rafter.
Here.
Trustee Vandenhoven is here. Trustee Dart is excused. Trustee Gass.
Here.
Trustee Dennis.
Here.
Are there any modifications to the agenda this evening? Is there anyone visiting who'd like to see an item moved up or down on the agenda? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the agenda as submitted? Trustee Gass, is there a second? Trustee Genrick?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Announcements. Is Administrator Lang here?
There he is.
Lost his microphone.
Brad, do you want to cover the announcements for us?
Okay, first of all, in an effort to be a little more reactive to a lot of the brush that's out this room, we are going to do a special brush pickup next week so that we're prepared for the leaf collection that will start soon after. So it's been on the website. Hoping that this will certainly help both the residents and the village itself about picking up leaves. So, excuse me. Budget workshops. I did send an invitation to each one of you. But we're looking at the first budget workshop being Monday, October 27th at 5 p.m. We have three scheduled, and we're hoping to eliminate the middle one at this point. So we'll look at October 27th and November 3rd, both at 5 p.m. We have a little bit of a conflict on the 29th, so I'll hope we can try to get those things done almost the next week morning. And then the budget hearing would be November 25th, and it would be publishing shortly thereafter. So that's for the budget. October 5th, or this week, is Fire Prevention Week, so we just wanted to, and it's in your packet, a little bit about what fire prevention is all about. And the theme this year, smoke alarms gave life, so we just wanted to make sure that that is put on the forefront. The last item that I would like to add is received a check from the Law Line. First of all, it's a thank you from the Law Line for allowing them to have a 2-day Oktoberfest event. A large undertaking, but the turnout was huge and a very large success. The amazing aspect of the event is the number of people it repeatedly brings into the village. As you know, they did not charge a cover, but suggested a donation. In the summary of the donations for collections this year, a $1,000 scholarship was put into the L.A. Kiwanis Leonard Hack Memorial Scholarship. $500 was given to the March of Dimes. $500 given to the Green Bay Animal Rescue. $500 to the Miracle League. $500 to the CP Center. $300 to the L.A. Beautification Committee. And $200 to the LA firefighters.
So $3,500.
On behalf of the family, they thank the
Lord. $3,500.
So, very successful. That's all I have for this.
I was going to ask you to send a thank you, you know, a word of thank you back to the Lorelei, but maybe I'll just do that in person myself. I'll do that duty, yeah.
What a guy.
It's always given to the village, aren't they? Anything else? Any other announcements? Trustee Harris?
Just a reminder that there's a public information meeting tomorrow night at Aldo Leopold from 5 till 7 regarding the construction on Riverside.
Is that going to be discussed here tonight?
No.
No, there's nothing on the agenda for that.
Is there any open discussion regarding that question?
Pardon?
Is there any, first of all, I didn't have a chance to read the agenda completely before you asked, are there any things concerning this topic in the highway, is there any open discussion regarding that topic this evening, or can it be added to the agenda?
It can't be added to the agenda, but under public appearances, you can speak with regard to any issue you wish. So if you have
that fall on the agenda?
It is coming up next.
Thank you.
Actually, I'm sorry, it doesn't. After presentations, we have a couple of presentations. If you'd like to us to switch it on the agenda, I'm sure we could do that, sir. If you,
you're fine.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, tomorrow night, 5 to 7 at Aldo Leopold. Anything further with regard to announcements?
Can I ask a question about what you just said about the meeting format?
Sure, absolutely.
My name is Tom Martin, and I live at the end of Briar Lane, right on Riverside Drive. What is the village's position, if you have one, on the construction that is planned on 57? And I'll wait till my friend here wants to talk later if you want to.
Yeah, we should probably talk about that under public appearances.
Sounds good.
And I would invite you to come if you can tomorrow night, because there'll be a lot of dialogue with regard to that.
Thank you.
Anything else with regard to announcements? All right. Ms. Clifford, General Code, to explain what's new in codification or recodification in our case. Right?
Well, thank you for giving me time this evening. I've got some issues here for about with you.
Thank you.
What I'd like to do this evening is to explain the codification process, answer any questions you might have about that. We have given the village a proposal, so if you have questions about that, I can respond to those as well. Basically, what happens in a recodification process is after the contract is signed, we take your materials, and within about a month or so, we'll have a telephone conference call. At that point, it's mostly housekeeping in nature. We will have done a preliminary review of your material, and maybe there's some pages missing, or we don't see an animal ordinance or something like that. So we might ask, you know, if you have that. You might say to us, we're thinking about revising our open burning ordinance. Can you send us some samples of that? What we'll also do at this time is put calendar dates to the different benchmarks in the process. What we don't want to have happen is for there to be an appointment process where we're asking for a lot of time from you, and it's a festival or it's budget time or elections or something like that. Then it goes to the editors for a more detailed review. The editors are looking for three things. One, they're going to make sure that you're consistent with the Wisconsin statutes and that you're not citing repealed or amended statutes. And if you are, we're going to help you bring that up to date. Two, we're going to look for conflicts and inconsistencies in your code. That could be terminology sorts of things. Maybe it used to be a clerk treasurer position, now it's a clerk position, or you've added an administrator and you didn't have one before, and so that's unclear in the document. But it could also be conflicts in the actual requirements of the ordinances themselves. Maybe you have a fence or an ordinance that says no fence is higher than 4 feet, but you have a swimming pool ordinance that requires a higher fence. So we'll point those things out. And then lastly, if we see things that other communities are doing that you don't have in your code book, we might make a suggestion. Would you like some sample language on X? We produce our findings in a workbook format, and we give you choices on how to resolve it. We look at this as a collaborative effort. We are not in the position to make the ultimate decision of what your ordinance should be. We're just going to point out where you had some sort of issue or you know, something wrong with it. You will also, in this process, you know, for a lot of people, it's the first time they've looked at the code book in a long time, or there's sections you forgot you had. So you're not limited to what we find as far as making changes. If you find some other material that's outdated and you say, we don't even do this anymore, feel free to make those changes. Because when you adopt the code book, you're going to adopt it as a whole. And at that time, we will produce a schedule of changes. So when the book is available for the public inspection for the notice period, it will be very transparent what changes are being made in the book. So once you've completed your workbook, any other changes you have, you send that to us. We will send you a draft, and that draft will give you a review for that, too. That's a fairly short turnaround time, because at that point, we just want to make sure that we want you to make sure we've incorporated your changes correctly. And then we go ahead and publish the code book. And I'll just pass this around so you can see. We do an alphabetical, topical arrangement of chapters. And at each page at the bottom, we publish what date it was originally published. So going forward, if you're doing updates, the new update change will be the new update date will be indicated. And we also put histories in there, so you can track back any amendments, any changes in any of the ordinances. And then in the back is a detailed index. And that entire process takes about 12 to 18 months to complete. So for that reason, the pricing in the proposal typically falls out over 2 budget years. So that's, in a nutshell, the process itself. Does anybody have any questions about any of that? The other thing I wanted to show you, and I'll pass this around too, is we've put in the proposal our premium e-code product. And right now the town of Grand Chute is using that. And premium e-code allows you to also upload your agendas, minutes, resolutions, budgets, a variety of documents. Right now, Grand Chute's doing agendas, budgets, minutes, and miscellaneous documents. But I'm just going to do a search here, so you can see how it searches across all of those document types. And so if you kind of hover, it'll say how many were in each, and you can go to the code one.
So the pricing is different depending on what? Or is it basically you do every element of recodification, or
60?
Right. There's a project price for the entire project. Okay. And then after the project is completed, you have 1 per year with the project of the online code. Okay. And if you continue with the premium, that is what we're offering you in the package, then that's 1 maintenance charge. But if you wanted to go to a different level of service, there's different maintenance charges.
And what does something like this cost?
We've given a proposal to the village, and that proposal was for $15,240. And that includes the code book, and some zoning pamphlets, the premium e-code with a banner, and we will actually upload for you 10 years worth of minutes so that the village doesn't have to do that.
We explored this a number of years ago, and I knew it would take a long time, but I remember the price being a lot higher than $16,000.
Okay.
It wasn't from you.
What's wrong with that?
So this sounds a lot lower. This sounds fabulous. I mean, this is going to fix a lot of problems. I think we spend more time in terms of labor looking up things for residents and having residents be unclear as to what the rules are than. And we're going to pay. If we were to go this route, I think we would pay for this in a year, just in terms of the labor that's spent on the part of the village, not to mention frustration on the part of residents.
Yeah, we've got a lot of positive feedback on the PubDoc, because that has made a lot of the research issues or FOIA responses, things like that, so much easier to deal with, because it is just a word search and you can pull up all of that information. Just to note, too, I'm a Wisconsin attorney, and I am available to meet with the village at any point during the process. A lot of times, some communities will ask for my help or have me come to a meeting when they're working on the workbook, so there's no additional charge for that. And then, too, and I gave a copy to Brad, and I forgot to bring it tonight. I do have a list of our Wisconsin clients, but we have done over 100 codes in the state, so we're very familiar with Wisconsin law.
Trustee Harris?
So there are several of the municipalities within this area you've worked with, or are you just moving into this area of the state?
No, we have, I'm trying to think who would be the largest. So we've got Town of Grand Chute, Town of Scott and Brown County, Bellevue, finished their code. I apologize, but Brad has the list. So, otherwise, I can send you a copy.
And then there's an annual, once we would get past an initial enrollment stage, for lack of better words, then there would be an annual maintenance fee in terms of maintaining the codes as they could be adjusted?
Right. There's two charges. One is the annual maintenance fee for the online, and that's in the proposal. And then if you update, but you have no... And then the other charge would be, you know, as you pass new ordinances, you'd send them to us, and they would go online as new laws, under the new law tab. I don't know if you saw it on the Grand Chute one, but you could go to their site and see that. So at some point in time, you're going to want to incorporate those into the code. So at the point in time where you incorporate them into the code and we create new pages, that's called a supplement, and that's a separately chargeable event. And that's done on time and materials pricing, and then, you know, you just call us up and ask for an estimate on that, and then thumbs up, thumbs down, you know, tell us to go ahead or not. So.
One more question, if I could. And then all the data, is that housed with to be linked through the Alloway website, or is it held within a Village of Alloway server, your server? How is that, where is that data held?
It's on our server, and what we do now is we will, and that's part of the proposal, we'll give you a free banner. So the banner on the code will match the Alloway website, so that people will not realize that they're on a different server and they click out of the code and they're right back on your website.
So they're heading to your website.
Mm-hmm. For that, yeah, that's on our server.
Is there an IT professional that we might speak to at your company with regard to the kinds of the database and sorts of databases are? I'm assuming you want this to be a long-term relationship, but what we don't want to get into is if the company folds or we decide it's not working out, that we have all kinds of data on your site that we'll have a hard time transferring to any other.
Sure, and I can get Brad that contact information.
Okay, cool. Thank you. I'm sorry, Trustee Rafkin.
If you choose not to do the annual maintenance, do we still have access to the online version?
What communities typically do at that point is you can purchase a CD of PDFs or what have you, and then there are communities that go ahead and just do their own, you know, updates and host it online themselves. So we have no claim, you know, to your material. You're free to do with it as you see fit.
So the annual maintenance fee allows you to continue to use the service,
correct,
not just upgrades, but using the service at all.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the annual maintenance fee is?
The annual maintenance fee for the premium is $1,195, but there are two, you know, kind of step-down levels, too. There's something called standard, where you wouldn't be able to put your agendas, minutes, resolutions. That's $995 annually. And then there's something called light, which you couldn't even put up your new laws. You could put them up yourself on your website, but they wouldn't be connected with the code, and that's $695 annually. And that's why we've been getting the free years part of the service. You can kind of see if you like it or if you're using the features. And after the end of that first free year, you're free to, you know, join at whatever level of service you feel is appropriate.
And then time and materials rate?
That's
to
for
make
the
changes?
Yes, that's for the updated changes to the book.
Mm-hmm. That'll be in the proposal, or that is in the proposal? Or?
That's based on how much material there is. I mean, I can see if I can get some sort of estimate for what communities.
I was just wondering, is it an hourly rate, or is it a...
It's not. It depends on who's working on it. It's not that clear cut, so to explain.
Any further questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks to, is it Debbie and someone else who discovered this opportunity. I'm really excited about this possibility.
Could I ask you a question?
Yes.
If we went in this route, should we freeze any work on any ordinances, or like Mark's going through the book every now and then and coming up with changes? Would we freeze anything?
I don't think so.
From that point forward?
From what point forward?
Well, to allow them to actually make the changes.
Oh yeah, there'd have to be some cutoff.
Cutoff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions? Dave, welcome back.
Thank you.
From the Central Brown County Water Authority, talking about the 2015 budget.
It's that time again, so.
Thank you.
Good news.
Well, that's pretty good news this year.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good accomplishments in 2014. Our litigation is finally over. We started in 2008 and we finally settled in the spring of this year with our last claim. And in total, we received about $5.5 million. It only took about $2.5 million in legal fees and expert witnesses to get there. So litigation process is finally over. We'll stop spending half a million a year on legal fees. Yes.
I'm new to this. Who was being sued?
We sued our engineer and three of our contractors during the construction process. The bulk of the settlement was from the engineer, and then we had some minor awards from the contractors as well. So.
Thank you. Bless you.
All of them, I should say, were negotiated settlements. We got right up to the court time, and then we settled. So. You just have to save a rattle for a few years to get there. We also, as you know, were reported earlier this year, water purchase and sale agreement amendments that allowed us to do two things, really, to improve our borrowing situation so that we could reduce the amount of cash we had to hold on hand, and also to deal with minimum take-or-pay quantities that are particularly important to Alloway. You're annually well under what was originally contracted for. So that was taken care of. We did revise our bond covenants as part of the agreement and as part of our bond sale. We now have 100% coverage from operations, which does have a little bit of a problem for us. Our coverage used to be cash on hand. Getting rid of some of the cash is why we have to do this now. We did buy a surety for about $300,000 to replace our $10.5 million in the bank. I get really uncomfortable when we have huge chunks of cash earning no interest, which is what was going to happen to us the first of this year. We also established a few new internal funds. We have a renewal and replacement fund. It's about $1.5 million in it for eventual repairs to the system. As part of our bond sale, we agreed to 3 months of operating reserve, and we are talking about having a rate stabilization fund. There'll be a resolution regarding that. Coming up at the board meeting 2 weeks. We advanced refunding bonds. We were actually a year and a half ahead of time in terms of call date. We also funded our $2.3 million in bond anticipation notes that we had taken out a couple of years ago and saved $12.1 million in net present value in terms of existing debt of the floor or the salt floor. We had a very good bond sale. It was a placed sale, and we had, in some cases, 5 or 10 times as many bids as we actually had bonds available, kind of block of bonds, so we were very attractive. I have given you the water storage facilities was the other issue we started dealing with this year. We have been studying this for at least 3 years in terms of our system and what we need to do to make it operate effectively. How do we protect
members from Monterey. We had several reports done on it and ended up with the idea that we really need to do some water storage facilities up in Ledgeview. Lots of different reasons for them. Postpones a lot of capital costs, both for the authority and for the members, even though it's expensive. But protects us against something that really damaged our system, and you never want to have negative pressure in your water system. We did have that event several times. So we are expecting about $100,000 a year in operational savings just from energy costs in the system. So we'll have some value. Artist rendering, construction has been underway since June. Might be up on Sperry Hill. Pre-stressed concrete tanks, and we've been pouring the slabs and pouring the panels. All the concrete work will be done this fall. In the spring of next year, they'll come in with a 550-ton crane, the mammoth, and start lifting the panels into place, and we expect the construction to be done in October. Craig and everybody will be informed when they're starting to do the construction because it's going to be fascinating. The taller tower, taller, skinnier tower, and it's a perspective issue here, but we have one tower that's 100 feet tall. It's a standpipe. It'll be the tallest standpipe ever built in this country. So it'll be a first, and it's an interesting process to watch so far.
Where is it located?
These are in Ledgeview, on Spray Hill, right near Michael's Quarry, if that makes sense. And construction will be ongoing probably till about the second week of November, and then pretty much will shut down for the winter. We'll have all the concrete slabs and panels poured, and again, we'll come and lift them in the spring. They're a little behind schedule, and what weather is a challenge. You just kind of muck it out there after that.
Is there an underground component to them, or are they?
No, these are entirely above ground. They are on straight on slab. They did the dirt cover off to get down the ledge rock. Very stable base. They had to grout some of the fissures in it that they weren't anticipating. But all in all, it's a they're both above ground tanks as far as side tanks. The smaller of the two is a 3.5 million gallon tank. That's the 100 footer, and then the other is an 8 million gallon tank. And they should really help us in terms of the number of some of the operating issues. The part of the nice timing of this is that we're eligible for and received a safe drinking water loan. We actually got commitment for the loan before we were rated on the selection process. It was an interesting thing to go through. But less than 2% interest on the project cost, which is a great progress. Project cost is estimated at about $12.8 million. We anticipate being less than that. That includes a fairly large contingency. So, we did all these projects, we refinanced, and what happened to our debt? And basically, the safe drinking water loan. We pay interest only until the project is completed, so our first principal payment is in 2016. Our refunding bonds have a step increase for 2015 and 16 and 17, and they build steadily, and once they hit that 9.4 million range, they're low for the next 17 years after that, the bonds are paid off. So the rate impact, once we get past that, will be minimal, but are somewhat of an issue. I didn't put this on the slide, but you have a table that, that looks like this following this slide. Indicates that the first several columns are the essentially the new debt after we've done our refunding our safe drinking water loan. The 2005 bonds are the bonds that we retired. And if you look at the total in the bottom right-hand corner, even with the new project and the new borrowing for the safe drinking water loans, the refinancing ended up with paying over $15 million less in bond payments over the life of the bonds. So we kind of timed this project well in conjunction with the safe drinking water loan, and we're able to do that with minimized rate impact. Last thing we've been working on this year is we have this fiber optic system that is badly underutilized. We were successful in leasing a portion of fiber to Norfolk Public Utilities. We gained some revenue from that, some up front and some annually. But we're also negotiating a fairly serious buyer on the system who would take it over, and basically our lease cost for the lines that we need would be less than our annual maintenance costs for keeping the system going. So it, plus we have a fairly significant cash settlement for the regular system. So we're pursuing that. It'll probably be the end of this year, first of next year, before we work everything out. So it's been a busy year in terms of trying to maximize the potential of the authority. So 2015 and water rates. As is every year, water rates are dependent on water sales. Historical sales, we're pretty much flatlined this last couple of years in terms of sales. I'm actually pretty happy with the sales for this year projected, in that it was a miserable year in terms of people needing water for things like gardening and lawn watering, which is where we get a big boost in sales. So the fact that we held even, considering the weather this year, was a pretty good indicator that things are getting healthier in terms of the community. And in fact, in terms of the annual addition to new customers, it was an increase this year over last year. So we're seeing some growth in the communities.
Do you have a sense of what proportion of water use is due to different factors? So, I mean, if it's a dry year, people are going to be watering their lawns more, et cetera, but what percent bump would you expect to see?
I'd have to look that up. It is significant. Mm-hmm. Our max days in the winter typically were around 6 million gallons a day, and we'll hit 13 million gallons in the summer on a really particularly hot day. So our use would double. We average about 7, so we have a range there. Mm-hmm. But the hot weather has a serious impact on water sales. We may have had some of our gains this year due to the freezing cold weather and all the water main breaks in the States. So maybe that offsets some of the summer use. But anyway, I think we're trending upward. I've done some analysis of winter sales in terms of what's happening, and we're seeing some increase on that. So that's not what it impacted typically. No. We go through a process every year of projecting the water flow by community. Essentially unchanged between 2014 and 2015. I will indicate where you see the contract minimums have all changed. Alloway is now safely underneath their revised contract minimum, as I was committed. So I don't foresee any problem with that going forward. We had some issues to deal with this year putting our rates together. Because of our refunding, We're going to close out this year with a substantial cash reserve. Our bond payment in November this year is about $3 million less than it was scheduled to be. So we're going to have roughly, some of that money was used to offset the borrowing, but we are going to end up with a large surplus at the end of this year. And considering our rates, we really wanted to minimize the rate variability. We have a rebate process, we have some other things we can do, but to hand you a large chunk of money and then raise your rates the very next year and ask for it all back does some bad things to your own internal rates. The Public Service Commission kind of frowns on that up and down behavior. So we're looking at how can we minimize the rate variability. So we have surplus funds. Several things we're looking at. One is reducing our safe drinking water loan. That loan will be determined in terms of final payments once we finish the construction project. And we're probably in place to put a substantial amount of money to reduce that borrowing, which will have a positive impact on everybody. Our auditor has committed to completing our audit in January this year. And so immediately after that, we'll be figuring out what to do with the surplus and identifying how much we have. We are looking at establishing a rate stabilization fund. Talking to the auditor, because of the 100% coverage requirements, we must charge you increased rates to meet 100% coverage for 2016 and 17. As you saw, our bond payments go up. We have to recover all of that money through rates. Talking with our attorneys and with our auditor, there's nothing that says we can't give you back the money we don't need. in some fashion. So what we're looking at is establishing a rate stabilization fund. I'll talk about that a little bit more shortly. The good news is that we're looking at just continuing the 2014 rates next year. No rate increase for new members. And even with that, we're looking at, again, a sizable surplus for that year that will be applicable to construction or to the stabilization fund. And we decided we really want to phase the impact of that increase in numbers. At the end of this whole process, if we still have money left over, we'll simply give it back. It's just not a real issue for us. So we're not in the business of holding other people's money. And we don't want to do that. This is essentially the rate stabilization concept, and I just did a worksheet. The board hasn't approved this. It'll be going to them along with the budget. Essentially, the first three columns, the first four columns indicate revenues and what the rates would be if we just did our normal rate. Actually, these will be the rates that we need to adopt going forward. You can see there's a sizable increase in 2016 and 2017. And after that, pretty much levels out to inflationary increases on operating costs. Always assume we don't have an increase in water sales. Any increase in water sales, the percentage of increase in water sales has a negative impact. Goes up, rates go down. That's the way it works. If it goes down, rates go up accordingly. So, both are good, and use assumption to say, assume it's flat, we do expect to see some growth. What I did for a working process is assume that we would have a maximum rate impact of 3% a year on any of our members, and then figured out, well, what would it take to make that happen, and when would we eventually get to the point where we didn't need to do any more rate stabilization, and in 2020 this would all work out. At the end of that, we have contributed back, rebated back almost $3.2 million in terms of rate stabilization funds, but you would have small annual rate increases. Hopefully manageable. And the 3% is really a max, again, assumes no growth in the water sales. So that's the thinking.
So without the rate stabilization, what would you think the rate increases would be?
Well, the rate, let me go back. It's really on there. If you look at the fourth column for 2016, instead of 431, it would be 447, which is not too bad. In 2017, it would be 487 instead of
448.
It's basically it would be a 7% increase in next year, in 2016, 9% increase in 2017. We're aware that you are also being impacted on the other end of your utility side, and mentioned by some of our tenure committee members, it would be a good thing not to have big rate increases for a few years. So
or any.
Yes.
What's the, is it a rolling average, or what's the lag time in terms of when you say there's an adjustment in usage where it would inversely affect the rates?
Well, the rates, well, it's annual.
Okay, so is it based on the previous 12 months?
Well,
that's
it's based
when
on
the adjustment would be made?
Every year we sit down in probably the middle of summer, talk to all of our members, what do you think is going to happen with your water sales for the coming year? How much growth are you experiencing? What are you seeing in terms of conservation efforts? In the case of a couple of members, they're still challenged by leak detection and water main breaks. How much of that are you going to get corrected this year? I will say that all but one of our members has spent an awful lot of effort on making sure they're not wasting water, which is a good thing, except it does impact the appearance of the rates. On the other hand, our budget's pretty much fixed anyway. It's almost all debt service. So while the rate may go up, the less water you're buying, the less total dollars you're paying. You're just paying a higher unit rate. It really works out pretty well. But we look at this annually. This will be an annual budget basis. It's fairly conservative in the budget numbers. I really anticipate this being kind of a top end in terms of the need for an increase.
I was just curious if there was more than an annual adjustment, so that's what I needed. Thank you.
We do it once a year at budget time. We have the ability, if we're way off track, to do anything mid-year that we need to do. But normally we just do our budget once a year. We are not governed by our public service rate process. So we have a little bit more flexibility than most communities do that have to go back and get approval for the rates. So again, there's some rebalancing in terms of what's fixed costs and what's O&M rate, but we maintain the same 418 per 1,000 gallons that we had last year, this year, for next year. And then look at comparison member cost allocation using that. You'll get the same bill in 2015 you got this year. So you'll have zero impact on your budget this year from us. Howard has a little bit of a decrease in what they're projecting. The state will have actually corrected some of their lost water, and Lawrence is impacting a little bit of rural crops, that's some of that. But in total, we'll generate about 33,000 pounds less. Again, we have a surplus that's not that big. So I promise not to get into too many numbers, and hopefully I've succeeded in that. But that's kind of where we are. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions from the board? I'm going to open it up to our guests. Hearing none, unless there are objections, we'll suspend the rules and we'll open it up to our guests. Is there anyone who has a question or a comment with regard to the presentation?
I have one. What's the rate cost difference between this water system and being at work?
Our current rates, I don't know what
3,000 gallons. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. I don't know what Green Bay's rates are.
Okay.
It's probably the way to where it was a long, controversial battle over where do we get our water from.
I understand. I'm not trying to guess that. I just was curious as to what the difference was.
I don't know. I don't follow Green Bay's rates.
Well, I like the water. It's a lot better than what we have.
Thank you.
Tell our neighbors in Denmark and all the way to Manitowoc that same thing so that they join the authority.
We would like that. Yeah.
Any other questions or comments?
You were going to mention something about the possibility of a camera.
Oh, I forgot about that. We have our engineer and our public relations firm working on posting a webcam at the construction site that would link directly to our website. We haven't figured out quite how yet or when. But certainly by spring, hopefully later this year, people will be able to log in and take a look at construction progress in live format. When they actually do the raising of the panels for the tanks, as their tallest, biggest tank ever built, they'll be bringing people in from all over the country to observe, and it'll be pretty fascinating that process. And again, we'll let everybody know.
No pressure.
No pressure.
Yeah, really.
The other interesting thing about this is that we'll also be contacting the schools in the area, including NWTC, which has their own public centers, for people to be able to observe and for kids to be able to see the applications of math and logistics and movement in relation to large objects. So there were a lot of applications for schools to this as well. And we thought that would be.
They were doing a rough calculation this afternoon on the panels on the larger tank. Each panel that they left in place was 72,000 pounds. So, roughly. It's a big mass. We don't want them to drop any of them. There are no spares.
Given that we didn't have great luck with our engineer for the pipe project, I'm imagining the engineer for this project is going to be checking his or her math more than once.
This project has gone quite well so far. The contractors have been extraordinary. We've had no issues with them.
That's great.
They're very careful folks. And actually, the steel work, and I don't have a picture of Lindsay, but the reinforcing iron in these systems is very complex and very precise. And they bring their traveling road crew from New York, actually, the iron workers. I believe they're working on every project. people being set in place just so. There's a lot of steel and iron in these structures to support concrete. So.
The amazing thing about this is that because the tolerances are so very tight to make this work, that these crews, and you think, well, why are they bringing somebody in? These crews that bring them in, you can look at a line of bolts, and honestly, goodness, you don't see even a hair's difference from here to 160 feet down. I mean, it's just amazing.
We did have one truckload of steel panels stolen in Texas on the route while they were in storage. They were eventually recovered.
Any other questions or comments from our visitors?
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
All right, we'll take up the rules. Public appearances. Is there anyone who'd like to speak this evening?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir?
Don't get your hopes up.
Good evening, young ladies and gentlemen. John Finger, 345 Volker Street. Last month, on September 9th, at your meeting, you had a person attend this meeting requesting an extension. He's a sexual offender. You canceled him. You wouldn't give him an extension. Lo and behold, he is still living there. I have talked to Deputy Lotnow, and the gentleman, if I understood Deputy Lotnow correctly, he has to register every 7 days where he's living. But if he's declared that he's homeless, he can live anywhere. Am I right, Deputy Lotnow?
Mr. Pinker, you have to address the board.
Okay.
And then
all right.
Once you finish up, we'll try to get Deputy Lotnow's opinion.
But I noticed he was in there all the time, September 25th. 26th, on the 25th, because of medical problems, I was up during the night, and all at once I see headlights coming through my bedroom window, and I looked out there, and here it's Ron Munyon coming in. What I can tell it's him is the person that lives below him in the duplex. They have a light on that stays on most of the night. The wife and I got up in the morning of the 26th to go to the Mass, and this is 5:30 in the morning. Lo and behold, Munyon's car is still there. This continued the 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th. October 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and on the 6th. Now, if we got a rule that says he cannot be there, I understand they gave him a visitation where he can visit his family. But I don't think that covers all night. If our laws are, if we need to rescind this law and get a good one, then I suggest we do it right away. Thank you.
Thank you. DEO Lotnow, would you like to, we've had some discussions, you know, the two of us, and I don't know if you heard from other board members, between the last time we talked about this and now. But.
As we discussed a little bit, there's a lot of gray area in the definitions, and I want to talk to Attorney Duffy about what exactly temporary residence and that, compare that to the rules of registration with the state before we take any action. I don't know if that's up to date, and we will be taking action on it in the near future.
Okay.
So we are addressing.
And will you please report to the, once it's resolved, will you please report to the board and to Mr. Pinkert as to what the result of the resolution was?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else you'd like to speak? Yes, sir.
Please excuse me, I might be nervous. My name is David Slanovo. I live at 590 West Briar, the corner of Briar and Riverside Drive. I've lived there since 2002. I've lived in Green Bay since, in Green Bay, Brown County since 1986. I come to talk about the future of Highway 57. And a little bit of background, I am an engineer. I'm a civil engineer. And at one time, I did work for the Division of Highways in California. And a little editorial, I got to work on the Beverly Hills Freeway. This was a freeway that went right through Beverly Hills. I was doing all the planning with the group that I was working with. We spent all summer doing it. We put the interchanges in, had everything designed. And at the end of the summer, somebody made the wise decision, we're not going through Beverly Hills. And I think the residents there were ecstatic. It's my vision, we do the same thing. If I give you a conclusion of my talk is, Highway 57 should really follow 32, as 32 goes north. It should follow the current bypass that 57 is following, go 172 around to 43 and go north. Because I believe that the intent of the highway is to have people travel from point to point, not necessarily pass through the community. Take the examples of Oconto and Peshtigo, both of which have had bypasses put around it. And I really believe we ought to try to find a way to make 57 into a beltway where it goes around the community rather than through the community. I would really encourage you to attend tomorrow. I don't know what the position of the board is. I did have a chance to talk to Mr. Fuller, and he was reflecting that, oh, there are other proposals out there. His position was you're not in favor of the broader proposal. In my particular case, it would take out several very large trees. It would take out the brand new sidewalk. It would take out a brand new fence and change the front of my yard. And if I look at design as a civil engineer, as you come out of the pier, it can only be four lanes. As you enter Green Bay, it can only be four lanes. Then why wouldn't we keep the aesthetics as a four-lane highway versus having it just a large, broad highway? So some questions I would ask, and I can talk with the engineers, questions like, has Green Bay, the pier, and Alloway come to an agreement as to what it'll look like? Are we working together? Because it's one highway project, is my understanding.
Yeah, the pier and the Alloway have been at all of the meetings where they've been invited, the public meetings, and we had a meeting, I think it was last week, for elected officials, and the pier has been invited to all of those because the project will go, you know, into the pier on the south end.
What's the current recommendation of the board?
Well, there is no recommendation from the board. We haven't voted on this as a board. We've been invited to participate in discussions, but the final decision is the DOT's, and they've made that perfectly clear that they will take input from all constituents. So, and the board members are not allowed to talk about issues outside of open meetings. So I can tell you from my perspective what I've heard from listening to other board members attend some of these sessions. And then others can feel free to chime in. It's my understanding that the board wants this to be minimally obtrusive to the homeowners along Riverside while still meeting the required standards for the road. And that is that it needs to be the lanes need to be 11 feet each, I think it is, and there needs to be a bike lane in the road, and then there's a discussion as to whether there also needs to be a sidewalk or whether we could basically use the Fox River Trail as a sidewalk and not... Or a bike lane, right.
Because that could really go the whole to the function of transit.
Right.
How ideally you want it versus people, kids.
And that's where we were this last meeting for elected officials. That, and again, I'm speaking with what I think I heard from not only people who were on the board who attended that meeting, but also some state representatives as well, of trying to find a way to make it as narrow as possible and still meet all of the regulations that the state has imposed.
Okay. Well, let me just tell you some more questions I would pose to the state, because there's some that are out there. What's dictating the need for increasing capacity? Then I would basically say, how does that compare to Highway 26 between Oshkosh and Waupun, two-lane highway, state highway, which has passing lanes about every 5 miles, but they have a huge truck capacity going through there. So I would ask them, what's the capacity that's going on? The other thing is, a question. This is just a general question. How does the village really gain by having Highway 57 go through the village? I know that the county will pay. The county actually does the snow plowing. They do snow plowing in 57 Webster and Life. They do a very good job. They do an excellent job. To the extent that I had to replace and repair an entire fence that they knocked over and claim on, but that's a whole other subject. So my only point to the board, I wanted to come in and find out where you were at. I hope to attend the meeting tomorrow. I hope that we advocate. I think you have a similar vision that we do as residents that are there. It goes real wide. I mean, the value of my property just goes for naught. I live in a very nice custom-built home. It has some really nice features to it. And if the wall comes up to my windows, whatever it's going to be, then I lose a lot. And yet, I don't know what will happen to my tax assessment and everything else that's there. So I really feel like they're treading on my front, on my ground. And I don't know what to do. So I'm here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And I have my wife made me feel I missed something, so we'll see what happens there.
Sir, you're next to me. Yes,
my name is Karen Slava. I'm like David. What I'm wondering is that I feel like you all should have a more aggressive feeling towards this highway, because did you not spend a lot of money in putting in all those sidewalks? And are you going to be looking there saying, oh, it's okay, tear up all our sidewalks, we don't care, we just have money to burn? So I don't understand. That's why I'm thinking you all should have a much more vested interest into this, because you already put so much money into those wonderful sidewalks, which I love. And if all of a sudden they're saying, well, according to law, you have to do this, 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 I'm going to go, wait a minute. Did you all not know about that beforehand? I mean, would you have still put the sidewalks in, or would you have said, no, we better not? I just think you put a lot of money into this, and I hate to think that you're going to step back and say, it's all right. Rip them up.
Sir?
You're on the same subject as the other one. Jim Warren's the name. I live at the end of Arrowhead, and I'm representing a bunch of families.
I'm sorry, can you repeat your last name and give
Warren's,
me your...
Warren, yes.
And your address?
536. And what I wanted to bring out along the same lines here is the DOT gave you that outreach presentation back in September 16th, and it was available on the internet. And I went through line by line to check it out. There's a couple of issues, one of which is the notion of a complete street. I don't know if you recall that. It defined a complete street as a roadway designed to be safe and accessible to all users, regardless of age or ability. I'll come back to that in a minute. And then the next page, it talks about 84.01.35, and it states in red ink, as opposed to just black, that the priority in the highway design is equity, access, and safety, not volume. And then lastly, on page 20 of that same document, they discuss facility exceptions, and one of the main ones which concern most of us is the widening of the streets from 49 to 90 feet to accommodate a bike lane or two bike lanes, whatever. A tremendous widening of the street. And the question is, the exception is absence of need. In other words, that requirement can be discarded if there can be demonstrated that there really isn't a need. And of course, everyone that you talk to says, what's wrong with the Fox River Trail? I've heard a couple of people say, well, there's some users, bicyclists, who actually use 57 to bicycle to work. And Alloway doesn't plow the bike lane. But I fail to believe that there's very many people involved that actually ride the bike in January to work. You know, I mean, we're talking a handful of people at the most. And it goes back to the notion of equity, which implying quality of use. I think the state is giving way too much emphasis to the needs of bicycle lane at the expense of both the property owners, with the other people talked about the decline, not only in their individual property, but the tax base, because once one property declines in value, it's a domino. It's going to go down the road. And there are some situations, our immediate neighbors, where this highway is going to be going right through the garage, or the widening is going to impact their property much, pretty dramatically. I mean, I don't know how that's going to work. So anyhow, I mean, there's a gazillion reasons why people aren't happy about it, but those are ones that I think should be considered. It seems like an enormous waste of money just to accommodate bicyclists. If we could get rid of that, leave the highway at a much more modest width, people would be less resistant to the change. Otherwise, everybody wants the road to be repaired. Mm-hmm. It's not like we're anti-progress. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Jim Waters, 525 Arrowhead Drive. I'm part of the Dominoes from Jim's property. I've lived in Alloway since 1976. My concerns are similar to the ones that have been addressed, but I want to specifically talk about a couple of areas that haven't totally been touched. One is aesthetics. I think one of the things that Alloway has been very conscientious about and has been very good at is creating a aesthetic environment along our highways that are pretty. And if we move from a 41 foot print on a highway to a 90, we're taking away what I would call quality property. I mean, the last move when we were taking property for the highway, for the sidewalks, we took away basically the little easement kind of property or a lesser property. Now you're taking away what I consider to be quality property. If you go along 57, you see a lot of trees that have been put up, a lot of you know, gardens and things, and those are things that are going to be gone. You know, not to mention some people's literally driveways, but that's a whole other issue. So that from that aesthetic and beauty, I think, you know, you're losing it. And all we're gaining is concrete. So let's talk about the concrete, another issue. We're talking about safety. I submit that there's more safety concerns about extending a piece of concrete from 41 feet to 90 feet than to adding bike lanes. There are hundreds of times more people crossing that highway to get to a bike, a very convenient, wonderful bike trail. I'm an avid biker. You would never catch me biking on the highway. I don't care what kind of lane you put in. When you got a 35, but it's 45-mile speed limit on the highway, I'm not going to bike on that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to bike to get across the street. And it's dangerous enough as is now with 41 feet. You extend that to 90 feet, and you're really putting a lot of people in harm's way. There are a lot of, you go down by Dairy Queen, there are a lot of families that are crossing that highway. So I think that something that's valuable, that's not really talked about much, is the access to getting across that highway and what it implies going from 41 feet to 90 feet and the potential cost. Because all it's going to take is one time for some family, kid, or whatever, to get nailed. And is it worth it? It's not. Okay, and so I'm looking at that as from a safety standpoint. It's not the safety standpoint of the bikers. These people, what I would call them, the hardcore bikers that are using the highway today, they're using it like they would use a car. They're aware of it. They're going to be, you know, yes, that lane gives them a little bit more safety, but not a lot. But the safety of the people crossing is an issue that I think needs to be addressed. And I think we as a community need to be the ones that are addressing it. Because the DOT isn't going to address that at all. They can care less. Their issue is put it out there, this nice big highway. They don't care about that. So, okay, so I've touched on beauty, on safety. And I think then the other thing is just, it comes to the part of mine, the property, you know, value. My property value is going to go down. I don't care what you're saying. It's going to go down. I'm too close to that highway. And the houses that are right on the highway, their properties are going down. You're not going to get, it's not going to be sold for that the amount that you can get, you know, without it. So mine's going to go down. Your tax returns, what runs the village is going to go down, theoretically, until you put the village up. But that's another story. So I think we look at what is involved. There's a lot that's involved. And what I keep hearing from people, sorry, is that this is already a done deal. DOT is just going to window dress. And I think that is a sham. And I think it's something that just is that the lady said. I think I would like to see a lot more vehemence involved if the part of the city and everything else is what we really are investing in, what we really need, and what we can get. I never even thought about what the gentleman said about moving 57, just getting 57 completely out of the thing, so it's not even a highway. I think that's outstanding, because those trucks are terrible. So I've taken more of your time than I should have, and I appreciate your listening to us.
Thank you. Just for clarification, those of you who have seen this presentation more than once, the 89 feet or the 90 feet that keeps mentioning, that includes the sidewalks.
What
correct?
Sidewalks?
It's not.
Well, the sidewalks is going to be 5 feet.
Ma'am, sir, I've got the floor. I'm sorry. But I just don't want anyone listening to think that we're going from curb to curb from 41 to 90 from curb to curb. That includes things outside of the actual highway, just so that we're all on the same page. I'm not saying that it's that's still what we want. I just want to make sure that anyone who's new to this conversation doesn't think that we're going from a 41-foot or 42-foot wide highway to a 90-foot highway. That just simply isn't the case. One's curb to curb and the other includes outside of the curb area. I'll take one comment from you, sir, and then I'll...
My only question is then, you know, what is the... Do you know the number?
It's
41 to what?
49.
Or 49 to what?
It's from 49 to... Is it 5 feet on each side?
I think it's 7.
It's 59, right?
It'll be from 85. From the end of the sidewalk to end of the sidewalk, it'll
be
80.
No, we're talking from curb to curb, right? Right now it's...
Curb to curb would be 5 feet for... Two
5 feet on each
so
side
10.
For two bike lanes would be 59 curb to curb.
Unless you put a median in there.
Unless you put a median in there, pardon? And then it's 10 feet more on each side for the sidewalks if you put sidewalks on both sides. So that's the conversation we're having with them. And again, the tone from this village was we want the least amount of impact on the residents. So if you've got to make the lanes a certain width, make them that width and no more. And now we're trying to figure out if we can get the bike lanes excluded and consider the trail to be a bike lane, and if we can have sidewalks maybe on one side but not on both sides. So we're trying to minimize the total impact on the homeowners there, but it's not an 89-foot curb-to-curb. That, I think, is 59 feet curb-to-curb. And then 10 on each side for sidewalks, which would be 79 and 89 total for the total project. Okay? I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Sir, I'm sorry.
Tom Martin. I'm at 591 West Briar, which is right on the corner of Briar and Riverside. I think everything that I wanted to say has been said. I wish the village had more say in what the state is going to do. You talk about your numbers. You've just taken up half my driveway. I can't get into my garage. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the only one, because you drive up and down that street, and then I can't think of a fence that's not going to be torn down. Telephone poles, power things that are going to be taken down. I can't believe the Catholic Church has given up that much land in the attic. And then you get down, you start at the pier, they've got some trees that are hundreds of years old, and they're going to take them down. You get down further into our way. Look at all the beautiful trees in that, that are down there that are hundreds of years old that may be taken down. One comment that was made that I think is important. Who in their right mind is going to let their kid ride a bicycle on Highway 57? I don't care what you do. That's absolutely absurd. You know, crossing a highway may be a better solution so we can get more people down to the bike path. But I just, I don't know. I think everybody's been said. I wish we had more power as a village to affect what they're going to do. David, you wanted to say something else? I yield my time. Can you do that? He had one more thing he wanted to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sir, actually, before we go back to you, if we could take someone who hasn't spoken yet, and then we'll... As long as you don't use it, I'm okay with it.
We've lived in LA for 45 years.
Could you give your name and address?
Yes, sir? Bob Muller, and I live on 529 Arrowhead Drive. The concern that I think we've all heard, you need to really focus on what kind of a safety mess this is going to create. And let me tell you why I say that. My wife used to teach, she's retired. She went to Washington Middle School. And I can't believe that she got out into this traffic safely every morning and got there. The last 2 days, I've had doctor's appointments early in the morning. So I thought, okay, I'll see what it's like at 7:45. Mm. And it's like, take your life in your hand and make sure you can get in. Now, I'm doing a right turn. And that traffic, I was driving 40, which I never do, but I had to just stay out of the way. And the traffic was up to 45. And then we get on into where the residential areas are, beyond our section of the village. And you come to the next group. It's the same problem. Everybody's trying to get out, and they're coming in droves. Now we're told it's going to the Marine Street in Green Bay. The first time we heard this, we were told that it would not affect the city of Green Bay, nor would it go to the limits of De Pere, because they're already taken care of, and furthermore, they keep up the highway. And since Alloway doesn't keep up this highway, now I don't know that, but that's what was said by the project director, that in the meantime, the state has to come in, and so they want it built the way they want, and they will take care of it. And I'm saying, okay, that's a simple solution. Village of Alloway, get your penny out there and keep that highway open so that they don't have to do all these things. But I want to go back to that safety issue again, because it really bothers me. We drove all the way down to Port here in Green Bay. And I tell you, if all of that land that has to be exempt from this because of these walls, the railroad tracks, the path, the bike path is just about 20 feet at most from the highway already down in those areas, then why do we in Alloway have to put up with that, to tear down everything that, remember, the codes and the building permits in this community have always been in place. Nobody built along that highway without the permit. Now what are you going to do with their properties? And if you look at the coal, Murky Coal Estate, there are some magnificent homes in there who are going to have that path right up to their back door. Then you look on the opposite side of the street, are you going to exempt them? Hey, they won't even be able to get out of their front door if you put in all that you're going to take. Now, if this is important to exempt somebody, then all of us need to be considered. And I urge you as a village board to really look at what this mess means, because you're destroying beautiful properties that were approved to be built. And now the state comes along with their hunky-dory bike trail and sidewalks, which would be nice, but not anymore. Now, we were building through a straight 40-acre field. Fine, do what you want to do. But you have beautiful homes and you have beautiful properties that will be destroyed. And I think that's a shame. And so please, consider us not as complainers, but pleading with you to understand our concerns and take it to heart and try to support us as well. And we alone can't do it, because as one of the speakers said, it's a done deal in the eyes of people who aren't affected. But those of us who are going to be affected, it can't be a done deal until we speak up, and hopefully you will speak up for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd wants to speak before we... Okay, sir?
I just have one comment. First of all, the electric power system goes along the street. It goes right along. It's a solid, major power supply going through there. All of that has to be relocated. And I don't know how they're going to do that without interrupting power. Huge issue, I think, as part of the design. The other thing is, as I go across 172, I have to slow down to 55. I have to slow down to 55 because I think the village of Alloway said they only want 55 miles an hour on their grass. So why do we have 25 in Green Bay, 25 in the pier, and 35 in Alloway? I look at it as we have a speed trap that we ought to put in place. I'm being facetious. But it ought to be a constant speed throughout. And then the officer here could make money, so to speak. And I, you know, you talk about safety. I have a drive-through. I have a round drive-through. I had to put in a wishing well in my driveway to keep drivers from going through. People don't care. They're just going to go where they want to go. And if you have bikes on there, they're going to go right next to them. And I go back to the safety. And if we're not going to do it safely, we shouldn't do it at all. So that's my $2 part. The power of the, I have no idea what WPS's position on this is. But they're going to have to relocate all the power. And that's a major power line that feeds the entire other side of the street, and it feeds several lines, and they go back all the way through our houses. That's just, I have no idea what that is. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Ma'am?
I live on Burlhead Drive.
Can you come up to the front, please? We need your name and address for the record. Sorry about that.
One thing I'd like to address is the safety of the fact that from St. Mary's Drive, they're going south. There are about at least six intersections that are very close together going both east and west. And all of the neighbors coming to Highway 57 or Webster in order to get out for work in the morning. Those intersections are so close together that it's very difficult to turn right or left at certain times of the day. Now, you take four lanes of traffic plus two bicycle lanes that every driver approaching has to take. And I think that's just too much, that's asking for accidents. That is absolutely not safe as far as all those streets being so close together. And I respectfully ask you to please start at Marine Street and then go south all the way through the project and ask yourself, what will be destroyed? Is it worth it for the village of Alloway?
Thank you. Sir?
Especially from the Sunlight Park area that was here, that they seem to be well represented. I've attended all of the meetings on Highway 57, even though I wasn't invited to all of them. I did attend. And as a member of the public and as a realtor, I'm on the Bikes Committee, I'm on the History Committees here. So I'm involved in a lot of the different committees that do you have actual control over the state on this issue? And the state will tell you that the village doesn't have any issue, any control, doesn't have any authority, and that it's a done deal. And they're going to try and convince you that, yeah, it's a sham process and that you don't have any rights here. But that's not true. These are federal funds. 80% of the money is coming from the federal government. The National Park Service has put laws in place to protect your properties, and you just have to know which laws can protect you and which laws are the right tools to use. And the historic preservation rules are where you have the real power. And even though I'm concerned about the safety, that's the top priority that we have. I'm concerned about the beauty. The stick that comes along with it is our historic standing along Highway 57. That's the very first public road between Lake Michigan and the Pacific Ocean. It was built by the people of Alloway, both with labor and with individual money, almost 200 years ago. I have a report here, a memorandum from the contractor to the state after they invited me for a private meeting with the state, and the state is very respectful. They doing their job as best they can, and I don't have any complaints about the way that the state does their job, but they want to be efficient. But we want safety and beauty and to protect our property values. And this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to redo and reclaim our birthright to the river as a community, and to make this a safe and beautiful road and not a shortcut between Green Bay and the pier. And we don't, if a better design takes the guys from the pier 2 or 3 minutes longer to get to Green Bay, that doesn't bother me. I think that this road should be safe and beautiful, and that our concern should be getting people across the road to the bike trails, not going up and down Highway 57, which is not an attractive and safe alternative for them. And I'll just read you. The state will consistently tell you, we looked at your alternative and it doesn't work. And I'm willing to go on record as saying that the top people in the state, the top people in the state historical society, are not qualified to evaluate the history of Alloway. I've been working on this for 5 years. I have my facts straight, and they have not done their homework. And what my strongest point was, I challenged them on Heritage Hill, on the significance of Heritage Hill, which is a 200-year-old site. It's an old army site. There's an old army graveyard there. There's, you know, it's a site. There's an old army schoolhouse there that was there that became the courthouse. The start of justice in Wisconsin started there. And we did our own study on it, and the state came through and said, don't give Heritage Hill historic status. So our original contractor didn't give us historic district status. And then another contractor came through, and they said, yep, we looked at that other study. That other study was right. We agree. Heritage Hill is of no historic value. It's a fancy amusement park that's been around for 35 years, which is not the case. And this is important because this is a cultural resource for us, and this is the tool that we can use. By concentrating on Heritage Hill, we can reclaim that we want that roadbed to remain the same, and that we want our power back. And for example, I requested, they said representatives met with Jim O'Rourke on August 21st to discuss the proposed State Highway 57, and he had concerns about Heritage Hill, and I asked for determination of eligibility. And they said, with regards to historic Heritage Hill, the other historic age buildings and monuments in the park had previously been evaluated through a BAT study and are not eligible for listing on the National Register, which is not true. And then they go on to say, I'll just read you just one short paragraph. Since Heritage Hill was established in 1977, its collection of historic period buildings is only 37 years old and does not meet National Register age requirements of 50 years. Heritage Hill is not yet old enough to be considered for potential significance in the area of history or architecture. Mead and Hunt recommends that a DOE is not warranted at this time since the property is less than 50 years old and does not appear to possess exceptional importance as outlined in the National Register. And that is our strongest argument. And if they can fight us on Heritage Hill, if you lose on Heritage Hill, you lose on the whole thing. Because Heritage Hill is our best cultural asset that we have in the village. So by taking and just documenting our cultural heritage on Heritage Hill and saying that we want our roadbed to remain the same, then we can talk to the National Park Service and have them reevaluate the whole corridor and bring it back to recognize it as a cultural historic corridor and as a scenic parkway and not as a shortcut between Green Bay and Napier. It's complex. The state says that they don't like reading all the manuals put out by the National Park Service because they're too hard to read, and that's not an acceptable excuse. But that's
Mr. Rourke, I'm going to have to ask you to address the board.
Okay. So the point that the Wisconsin Historical Society doesn't want to read all the manuals that the National Park Service has put out that are designed to protect us doesn't give them the right to say that we don't count. So by concentrating on what authority we do have, which is through the National Park Service, and we're protected through the Historic Preservation Law of 1966, that is how we can save the property owners adjacent to that corridor. So it's a little bit difficult to understand how we get from our gardens and our trees to Washington, D.C. and the National Park Service, but we have this historic
Mr. corridor. Mr. Rourke, could you please address the board?
We have this historic corridor that is our tool that we can use to protect the people of Alloway and the property owners along Highway 57. And then because I'm also on the bike committee, the Alloway Walks Committee, I'm very concerned about crossing Highway 57. Highway up and down north-south doesn't help us at all. East-west borders is what the village needs, and that we support bike and ped plans here in Alloway. I don't think personally that the Highway 57 plan helps the bike ped program at all. So I would suggest that we move forward in talking to the National Park Service and have them reevaluate the contractor's evaluation of Alloway. And the reason that they called me in was because I was right. And they didn't want me to be in public meetings. And so we had the meeting recorded. And those records are available. And they're very nice people, but their job is to be efficient. And our job is to protect the property values and the beauty of Alloway. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hello, my name is Carol Andrews. I live at 415 Beaufray Street, and I would like to just say a few words to you about your codification project, if you don't mind. I didn't know it was going to be on the agenda, and I'm glad that I was here. It's probably a good idea. I'm on Debbie's email list, so I get all of this stuff.
Excuse me, sir. Ms. Andrews has the floor. If you could please yield. Thank you.
And I have to tell you, you guys create a lot of ordinances. Mm-hmm. Really a lot of ordinances. So I just wanted to offer a suggestion to you. Ms. Clifford mentioned that there would be places where you don't have ordinances that she might suggest to you that you create an ordinance. And I would like you to please look through our records first. Make sure there's an actual need for this ordinance before you create another ordinance. because it's gotten to the point where at the top of my list of things to do, sometimes it's check the ordinances to see if I can do it. I don't know if I can do things. And I don't want to find out afterwards that I can't do them when I've already put money into it. So, just, you know, one of those things is the measure of small government isn't always the size of the board, but how far into our lives they're willing to reach. And to remind you to remember what your mother told you about not following people who are jumping off of bridges. So, anyway. Then the second thing that I just wanted to mention to you about the issue you've got going on here is that a number of you know me and know that I served 2 terms on the county board representing District 15. I've had my share of fun with the DOT, and they do treat you like there's something on your list that has to be marked off while they proceed merrily along doing what they wanted to do regardless of what you said. But I'd like to remind you of a couple of things. There are no roundabouts on most of Military Avenue. And you've got a lot of people here who are very concerned and would happily help you if you made their concerns on that street of a matter of importance to them, to you. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak before we wrap it up? And we'll continue tomorrow at Aldo Leopold at 5 o'clock.
Can I just comment?
Pardon?
Can I comment?
Not yet. We've still suspended the rules. I'll take them up and then you can comment. Okay, we'll take up the rules. Trustee Guest.
Now I can comment.
Now you can comment.
You know, I think you people have come and brought a number of very legitimate concerns to the board's attention. But I think every single one that you brought up, we must be doing a fairly decent job, because everything you mentioned, I ticked off the list, is something that we have already addressed with the Department of Transportation and intend to continue that process. We've been very clear with the DOT that Alloway wants to minimize the impact on the property tax. We've been very clear about that. We've been very clear that safety across that very busy street is a major concern that the village has. And you'll see in some of the conceptual drawings, and there's going to be actual marked crossing areas to provide access to the trail. We've been very clear that speed is an issue on Riverside, and we somehow have to develop speed control mechanisms and devices. It may be a roundabout in an appropriate location, because that slows speed coming in and out of it. No way will it ever look like West Mason. I mean, I'll shoot anybody that suggests that if we put 3 or 4 of them in a row, that they do reduce speed. And you're going to see some controlled intersections as well. So all of the things, I mean, it was amazing. All of the things that you good folks have said, we've already given consideration to, and that has been kind of our dialogue with the DOT. Aesthetics. We want to make that a very pretty thoroughfare. I mean, it is one of the few major thoroughfares that we have that go through the village. And we have Webster, we have Live, you know, we have Riverside. So we've been very clear that aesthetically we want to make it look pretty with plantings and ornamental lighting, because we want people to feel very welcome when they come into our community. So the comment I had was, it was just amazing that all of the things that you have said tonight are the things that we've heard and that we understand, and that we intend to strongly and aggressively convey to the Department of Transportation. And I wish our Public Works Director had stayed, but he's been in very close contact with the DOT on the plans, giving them input into our suggestions and our commentary, so that our comments get in very early in the process, so that they can be factored in to the extent that the DOT will do that. Now, I don't think it's a done deal. I mean, by any stretch of the imagination. I think what's happening is, and I hope not to be wrong, but what I think what is happening is people are hearing horror stories in terms of what can happen out there. And you might even see some of the horror stories on some of the early conceptual drawings. I think the problem there is the Complete Streets Act. Because the law says you've got to make them this way. So they got to put it on a picture to make it look that way, and maximize the bike lanes, and maximize the sidewalks. Because I think the law requires them to do that. Now, that's not necessarily what they're going to build. because there's exceptions to that rule. But they got to start with the picture that said, look, if we follow the law to the letter and do all the complete street stuff and put in all the bike lanes and put in all the sidewalks, this is what it looks like. And that's going to look like a very terrible picture to you folks. And I agree it would be a very terrible picture. But I think they got to start there to show what it would look like if they built it to the letter of the law and put all of these things and these amenities in. And once they're there, then the goal for the DOT and the goal for the village is to backtrack from there. And there's a number of exceptions. If it's cost prohibitive, you can backtrack. If there's other means of access, such as the Fox River Trail, you can backtrack from that drawing and whittle it down to the point where it's manageable, it's workable, and it doesn't unduly interfere with the property owner rights. So I think it's a work in progress yet. I think about the only... Right now they're trying to decide on a concept. No engineering's been done. In fact, I don't think that's going to even start next summer, next fall. You know, that's when they're going to start putting pen to paper with the engineers. So tomorrow's meeting will be important. Our continued dialogue with the DOT will be important. But I think we're hearing some things that I don't think will ever be a reality, because I think they got to start with this golden Cadillac version of the get the bikers out there and the walkers out there. And then they want to downplay that and get rid of some of those things, because about where the DOT and you folks, because you live there, I don't, you're the property owners right there, where you align with the DOT, they really don't want to take any more land than they have to. You've got to pay people for that. So that increases the cost of the project. And in these budget times, they don't want to go there any more than they have to either, because they've got to pay for it. So I think everybody needs to show up and continue and express these opinions. And what I want to say is that what we've heard tonight is exactly what we're concerned about. Those are all very, very valid points, and we hope to continue to press those points and advance those points and positions of the DOT. So I just wanted to say that, you know, we've heard you, because what you say makes sense. I mean, it really does. It makes sense to this board, but I just wanted to convey to you that we're on the same page. And we've been telling the DOT these things, and we'll continue to tell the DOT these things as the plans develop and they arrive at concepts and they start putting the actual construction plans together. I mean, we're going to work closely with them to make sure that these kinds of observations are taken to heart by them, because they make sense. And like I said, in a lot of ways, we're aligned, because it all boils down to money. And the less they got to spend to do it, the happier they'll be. We want them to spend a little bit more on some pretty light fixtures out there and make it look pretty. But when they get around, so trust me, they're going to look to start cutting costs. But I think they've got to start with this big picture and put everything in there, and that's going to be a real ugly picture. But then they whittle off and say, wow, it's too expensive to put sidewalks on both sides. We'll put it on one side. We can't put sidewalks over here. Well, the Fox River Trail is over here, so maybe we don't need a bike trail. So they're going to look for exceptions, too, because it makes the project a lot less expensive. So
I think what I've heard tonight, trustee guest, though, that I haven't heard before, is that the residents want the board to be more vehement and passionate than they've seen in the past. And so that's something that I'll be taking into consideration as we move forward with our meeting tomorrow night and beyond. Any other comments from the board? Yes, trustee Rafter.
A couple of comments that were made tonight also came up at the elected officials meeting earlier this week. One was moving 57. That is an interesting concept. If we move Highway 57, then we find another way to reconstruct 3.5 miles of roadway and pay for it. But one of the things about reducing the speed and the safety, the comment about safety and when you widen the road, it's not going to be any safer. In fact, it's going to be worse. One of the gentlemen from the DOT said, but that's why we're thinking about putting medians in the middle. Webster Street has medians in the middle, and last night I tried to cross it while walking my dog, and I didn't want to go even halfway. So I agree that widening that street surely doesn't make it any safer. The comment about bicycles, in addition, just adds to the complexity and the lack thereof. Several people had asked, why can't we lower the speed limit? And they said, because people drive this speed, that's what they're comfortable with, that's what we set it at. And we said, well, how do we change that? One thing they said was the connecting streets or connecting highway program, where we accept as a village, we accept the responsibility to maintain the roads. Right now, the county plows it and takes care of it, but they do that as a paid contractor from the state. The state pays them to do that. And the connecting highways allows us more control, in theory, over those roadways and the posted speed limits. I asked the gentleman from the county to send me, or the state to send me some information. He sent me information on how much you get funded, but it didn't tell me what additional benefits do we get and what additional controls do we get. So I'll be interested to know that. My main concern at the beginning was when I looked at the maps and I looked at cutting into people's properties, and I live on West Briar Lane, and I look specifically at Mr. Martin's property, and I said, he's going to lose his driveway. You can't do that, you know. And that's true, someone said, all the way up and down the corridor. That's a terrible concern, and that's why I do agree with Trustee Guest in saying they can't logically expand it all the way, and they've made statements to that fact. They know that they have to make some adjustments. But they're going to make adjustments based on input and feedback and pushback. So we have an eloquent group of people here tonight. I thank you so much for coming. And I encourage you to come and be just as eloquent tomorrow night and invite your neighbors to do so. I hope we have a great turnout tomorrow. But what is also very impressive is, while being very eloquent, you're also very professional. You care about Alloway, and I do think that the folks on the project from the state are also interested in doing the right thing. The last statement I'll say is Senator Coles was at the last elected officials meeting, and I'm not going to speak for Senator Coles, but he did keep saying, well, you can't stand behind a law. Just because a law was made doesn't mean you can't change the law. So I think you've got a guy in your corner there trying to do things as well. Thank you.
Trustee Dennis.
I just want to say, I know, I believe it was Karen that said that you weren't quite as passionate as you were before. We have to maintain a certain image. We have to maintain a certain civility when we're sitting here. We have to maintain a certain decorum. Didn't work that way when we were meeting with them in our private meeting. When we were in our private meeting with them, let me tell you, there was, by the time they came out, they were sweating, and they were upset, and they were wondering, what is with the people from Alloway? They really speak up. So these elected officials, the people of my right, I'm not saying this because I owe them anything or I'm sucking up to them, because I don't have to do that. They spoke up on your behalf, and Senator Cole spoke up on your behalf. And to tell you the truth, I was a little surprised at how vehement they were. So don't think that what you see here is representative of what we're doing behind the scenes. Because behind the scenes, the people that were in attendance really did work very hard to do not only what was right, what was expected, but what we hoped for as well. So just that motivation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further comments from the board? Are there any other public appearances? Yes, sir.
It's important that you get your input in writing to them because they're required to document everything. It's much easier for them to include your comments in the report. They are required to keep the chat up with them.
For tomorrow night's meeting for the DMP.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we should ask them for their email address. Notice I addressed you on that respect.
Pardon?
We should ask them for our email address. I'm addressing you in that respect, not over here. I'm learning the process. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I want to add one more remark. I thank the board for what you've done to protect Alloway and this project of English. I'm wondering if any effort has been made to secure an exemption of the bicycle there, given such close proximity to the highway that extends throughout the entire corridor. From my existing trail very close to the proximity of the highway. I can't imagine any state bikers wanting to use the state highway system for bicycles.
That issue has come up, yes, in our discussions with them. We will continue to pursue that option of exempting us from the bike lanes because of the trail. That's what you meant, right? Okay. Are there any other public appearances on another issue? Hearing none, we'll see you tomorrow night. You're welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting. But don't feel...
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the candor.
Thank you very much.
The first part's like a poker game. I'm across the street.
All right, we'll move on to item 6, action regarding ordinance 2014-23, amending section 7.12 and 7.14b2 of chapter 7, public nuisance related to the definition of officer. Is there a motion with regard to this item? I'm wondering if Ms. Andrews wants to make a motion to throw out the ordinance altogether. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gast?
I'll move to adopt the ordinance.
Is there a second? Excuse me, Trustee Harris? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Item number 7, action regarding ordinance 2014-24, creating section 1.11 of chapter 1, general provisions relating to citations. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Lotnow or Administrator Lang, do you have any details about this?
This was one that was, I don't want to say admitted, but that was not originally put into our ordinance, giving the authority for certain individuals to write citations and that's what this address.
So the first was the definition of officer, now this is the citation to terms.
You can refund all the citation free. Fine.
Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gass?
Yeah, I'll move to that.
Is there a second? Trustee Dennis, second? Discussion? Officer Lotnow, does this look... Does it look in line for you that all the bases are covered with regard to writing citations?
I think so. I think just in the definition part, the only part I brought up and asked Brad, well, as long as it turns out you will give the next minute through him, the form of citation outlines the Wisconsin Uniformity School citation. Existing a three part citation, which is a paper citation.
Oh, right.
If ever using work, I know Mark uses those. The only time some of the deputies use them, we have a computer issue.
Right.
Typically, it's all electronic these days, so I don't know if that'll have a big effect. It's probably a long shot that it would ever come up. And like I said, I think if it was approved by Dennis, then it would be fine.
You don't have to be refunding if we don't use the carbon, right? Okay, can you just double check with Dennis sometime when you see him again to make sure that we're okay on that? Trustee Harris?
So just to clarify, there's no formal definitions anywhere else in our ordinances spelling out how to complete a citation. That's what we're doing, formalizing this. Okay, that's... Just making sure.
Do you have any idea why we didn't? Did we just sort of, since we contract with the county, we figured they would have processes for this that we would follow, or don't, no, okay.
We all did.
Fred's telling me, 3 months on the job. Come on.
Yep, another reason for the codification process.
Right, absolutely. we do have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? right, motion carries as well. Item 8, the consent agenda. We'll take items 8A through E unless there are objections. Is there a motion with regard to items 8A through E?
I move to adopt.
Trustee Genrick, second. Trustee Harris. Discussion? Adopt meaning accept and place on file, right?
Correct.
where appropriate, I guess, right? Because they're all worded a little bit differently.
Approve and accept.
Okay. Does everyone understand the motion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Monthly report on the Neighborhood Watch Association.
Several people in the village that have expressed an interest in getting the watch program started. So I've been ordering some starter packs, so to speak, and some information, and have been continuing to be in touch with those people to get the ball rolling on that. And as always, if you know the group out there that hasn't had a meeting for a while, it's open invitation, contact people to get something set up. as far as the association goes, Trevor and I met with Cheryl from the City of Green Bay, who spoke with us earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just to get some ideas and how they lay the groundwork for their neighborhood association and how things got going for them. What we found out what they did or what she suggested is start with identifying and contacting a few neighborhoods. That door would be a perfect example that have been active and come to meetings with concerns. So this would be good for other one that come up was the other area, the Hilltop Apartments, where we've had concerns about the development of that property. The sex offender issues, folks from Half Street in that area that came into our meetings, to contact them and have a small meeting first. I think at that point, we would get together with our task force, so to speak, you know, who we talked about at the last meeting with Brad, Trevor, myself, and kind of Steve, and we've discussed and discussed the issue with them in order to determine if it's something they would be interested in going after. From there, have them go back to their neighborhood, talk to their neighbors, get a feel for if the neighborhood also would have interest in doing it. And if we get a positive, you know, response from that, then we hold a bigger meeting, help them, you know, go hand out flyers or do a mailing in the neighborhood, something along those lines to get things to get started and hopefully develop the association. So we're just kind of taking a cue from her and what they did to remix and get things going. They also had some other ideas. In Green Bay, for example, they, if a group gets to a certain point where they're going to have a general membership meeting, they'll help with the advertising, and they also gave them a startup fund of $1,000. That's Green Bay's decision to do that. You know, we certainly wouldn't have to jump into that boat, or we could make it, you know, what we want,
right,
depending on the need, maybe, of the neighborhood. But there's other things like that we talked about. But right now, Trevor and I have talked about maybe what group we want to identify and reach out to come in on a smaller level and have that initial lead, and then try to branch out.
The Oakry Street area seems to be, I mean, right, those folks, I know they have their, they used to have their parties, I was never invited, but they used to have their parties, and they're, all right, that's perfect.
Is that
but we see a lot of people though? From, you know, Trustee Green was from Oakry, Miss Andrews is from Oakry, the Pinkers live on Oakry, they're usually pretty active, and they have some pretty, you know, consistent issues with regard to now with the offender in that area, but with speed as well, as I'm sure you're aware of. So that might be, strikes me as a part of Alloway that's a pretty cohesive neighborhood as well.
Is that, residents. Is that get together covered in the code at all? You check into that.
You'll be able to search much easier. Are right, any questions for? Do you allot now? Excuse me.
Just one?
Yes, Trustee Rafter.
Rick, you were saying that you had some interest already. Do you know what neighborhoods have expressed interest? Or?
Specifically for neighborhood watch, I've been in touch with a gentleman Street, and the third one was it's one of the side streets off. One of the cul-de-sacs there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's another area in that LeBron McCaslin area where you've had lots of discussions about that roadway, where I'm sure the, you know, those folks are very active and they have an issue that brings them out. So, all right. Any other questions? Thanks, Rick. Is there a motion to adjourn? Trustee Genrich, second. Trustee Dennis, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We're adjourned.